Hello, and welcome to episode 63 of Must See Matches, the essentials of pro wrestling as nominated by you. I'm going to get that in every week because I've been forgetting. I am Kieran Lefort, and joining me, as always, is the man behind Must See Matches, Mark Buckley. Mark, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm good.
Oh, you're just good. You've cut your catchphrase down by a third.
Oh, yeah, it is a third. Yeah. I forgot maths for a second.
Still got to get the t-shirts printed. Today, we are talking about Mitsuharu Misawa versus Kenta Kobashi from January the 20th, 1997. All Japan Pro Wrestling, of course. Osaka Prefectural Gymnasium for the Triple Crown. And joining us is one of the most passionate wrestling fans I know. Former Scourge of the UKFF, former ring announcer, a wrestling podcaster from almost before there was wrestling podcasting, and owner of more kidneys than any human should. It's Mudge. Mudge, how's it going?
Hiya. Oh, I'm great. I'm just sat here shitting into a bag. It's lovely stuff. My aim was to get you to break on my first line, and I think I did it, so I'm happy there.
Yeah. I really wish we gave these episodes titles instead of numbers, because that'd be it, shitting into a bag. So, we have known each other a very long time.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever asked you this, so I'm going to do it on air. How did you become a wrestling fan in the first place?
Basically, I was eight, because it was 1991. And basically, the hardest kid in my year, who was madly into wrestling, brought in a sticker book or something, or the Ref magazine, and kind of like told me about it and all that kind of thing. I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. This would have been a couple of weeks before WrestleMania 7. I watched some of the undercard, and then the Jake Roberts blindfold match put me to sleep. Not literally, but I'm like, this is dull. I'm going to go and do something else. And I went back upstairs and played, like, I don't know, Super Nintendo. And then I got back into it because basically everybody was into it at that point, at school and everything like that. I jumped back in with a bit of the build up to SummerSlam 91. And then I watched SummerSlam 91, which I still love as my first pay-per-view that I would watch all the way through. And then everything goes incredibly hardcore for WWF with the snake angle and Jake Roberts making sexual references constantly to Elizabeth.
It's a weird and violent autumn for the cartoon promotion, isn't it, 1991?
Yeah. Well, it's really, there's a bit more, because earlier in the year you've got people throwing fire. And you've got there's a bloody match, not that you'd know at the time, but there's a bloody match in Madison Square Garden with Slaughter and Hogan. Mm. And there's the Warrior Casket stuff, which is pretty heavy. Mm. There's something else I'm forgetting, but there's a lot of heavy stuff for a kid to be watching. Mm. And if you think about it, it stretches on to next year with the I fucked your wife angle with Savage.
I don't think it was ever referred to as that, but yes, I know the one you mean.
That's what it was, really.
Yeah, and you get Bret and Flair gigging themselves at WrestleMania 8, and you get...
And then you've got the good matches with, you know, Bret and Perfect, and then Bret again at Mania, and Shawn just doing stuff on the undercards, and just lots of good stuff. So give me blood and give me people hating each other, and that's what I want, right?
Fair enough.
Ever since, and then you kind of expand and contract and all that kind of thing. If you're not getting what you want from the stuff that you've got available, you look for other wrestling to kind of satiate you, which is how you jump into, oh, right, well, the ref's fun in 1999, but it's not
watchable.
It's watchable for the angles and stuff,
yeah,
right, but if you want good wrestling matches, you might get one on the pay-per-view, but the crowds are dead in 1999 on pay-per-views, just completely dead for the matches themselves. So I bought some Japanese stuff off a tape trader that was advertised in the back of Power Slam.
Can relate.
As part of my first order, I got Best of Japan TV October, November 1999. Mm. Possibly 98, actually. I might be thinking 98. Anyway, it's got Misawa Kobashi from Halloween.
Mm.
And it's incredible. That was the first big King's Road match I watched. and just they're doing stuff. I've never seen people doing moves off aprons to any extent. I've never seen people hit each other that hard. I mean, it's horrible quality. It's got like, you know, wavy tracker lines everywhere and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and the clock in the corner. Yeah.
I didn't have the clock in the corner. I had the weird tracking thing. And yeah, the first half of the tape is all New Japan Juniors with Otani and Kanemoto kicking the shit out of each other. Mm. And you're like, okay, right, Kanemoto's the one with the giant knee braces. Mm. And because otherwise you can't really tell difference because the quality is so bad. And they're both guys, and they're both, you know, young guys in black trunks kicking the shit out of each other.
Is that actually the reason why All Japan was so popular in the 90s tape traders? Because you could tell who the fuck each person was because of the colored trunks.
That's not massively stupid.
It's not
it?
Beyond the realms because, of possibility, is it?
Yeah, because you get 90% of, especially the 80s and early 90s New Japan heavyweights, they've all got short black tights. I mean, Muto doesn't.
See, because he knew about bad quality VHS, that's what it is.
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know, fuck, some of these are so bad, you can't tell if it's Tawa or if it's Baba.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. In an attempt to drag this on track, when do you think the first time you saw this match was?
Oh, God. At some point in the early 2000s, I reckon.
Okay.
Because I was filling in my, I was watching the stuff going forward, like Misawa Vader was 2000 and and the Kawada match with the whatever. But yeah, a couple of years later, because I'm like going back and watching. Mm. I'm not the guy that, I would get full shows wherever I could rather than just the comps.
Yeah.
Because I always like the idea of having full shows. Mm. So that's what I would do. So I would, or even the commercial tapes that had the main event and then some undercard matches afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. The Japanese commercial tapes when it comes to pro wrestling are always a bit of a crapshoot, aren't they? Like, very rarely do you get the full thing start to finish with all the entrances and commentary, like, as you would expect, like a Western pay-per-view to be. Like, you can have 1 hour and 20 minutes and all the undercard is clipped and there's no commentary and we've dubbed over all the music. Oh, here's the main event.
Yeah.
And then here's 20 minutes for that Sushi Onita crying at the end for some fucking reason.
Yes. Oh, Atsushi Onita crying is, you know,
we've covered him twice.
I haven't listened to these ones. Are you a fan
of Atsushi Onita crying?
Yes.
When it's his own match, yes. When it's somebody else's, he can fuck right off.
Yep.
Mark, how about you?
Weirdly, I'm going to have to pull out my WWF answer this week.
Oh, same here. Sunday.
When it comes to things like older matches, it's like, because I'm aware that a lot of these All Japan matches are in the 40 odd minute stratosphere, it really puts me off actually going back. I'm perfectly fine watching a 40 minute match if I don't know it's going to be 40 minutes.
Yeah,
like,
I get that.
Like all of the, like peak New Japan, especially when it got to the kind of Okada, oh, he's taking the piss now. I was fine with that. It's
the
just
piss taker, Kazuchika Okada.
I mean, he's got the color right.
Anyway,
but yeah, but it's the kind of not knowing. I'm fine with it when I know I need to invest that much time. Mm. I'm much more reticent, which is why usually when I go back, it's things like the 92 Sendai Kobashi Kikuchi tag because it's like. That is really that's concise. It's stuff I'm more likely to go back and watch something if I know it's half an hour or under.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough.
And sometimes that pays off because my attention span doesn't work. And sometimes I come across a like the Thunder Queen battle. I know it's not what it's called, which is an hour's worth of my time, and it's one of the best matches I've ever fucking seen.
Mm. So this for me was over 40 minutes. Not a style I generally enjoy, and I knew the winner going in. It's like the triple threat of.
I mean, why this do is I have to you watch guys this? Going didn't get it, and me going no. Here's some context. Here's some context before. Here's some context after.
You mean you've listened to the episodes where Kieran watches All Japan
today? Because I've been trying to find time to. Oh, I should listen to some of these to see what I've got myself into. Because I've been listening to Kieran just losing his mind over terrible British wrestling from 1999. and I'm like, yeah, it's probably not going to be the same kind of thing, but based on his reactions to King's Road, it might be.
might be marginally less despairing. You talked about context. Do you have any kind of context going into this match?
Yeah, there is an incredible guy on. I know him from the Pro Wrestling Only forums. He's got a sub forum that basically that is dedicated to him. I believe his handle is Kinch Stalker.
Yes.
Yeah, he translates Japanese wrestling books written by, you know, either autobiographies or written by journalists, and, you know, goes and just translates it and pulls out things that nobody knows. He can either bring new understanding of something, or sometimes he can just refute what the understood Western opinion is, because he's got, you know, a different opinion from a different person translated directly, rather than relying on, you know, one source or whatever that has been.
Yes, I saw a tweet from him which was debunking the myth of the Tiger Driver 91.
There you go.
Yeah.
The exact kind of thing. Yes. But he talks about this match because it's Kobashi won the title May the year before this match. Mm-hmm. And it's Kobashi with the Triple Crown. He's going in. It's billed, or they talk in the build-up interviews, as this is a match to change all Japan. I may not have got the quote 100% right, but that's the gist of it. Misawa is basically saying, a direct quote from Misawa is, "You can't wrestle if you think about the future."
Okay.
I mean, that describes his booking.
I'm not wrong, but you shouldn't say it. He's dead. Have some respect. But yeah, that's the thing. He basically, the theory is that he's going to go all out. He says, "I'm not going to wrestle deliberately. I'm going to wrestle with all my heart," or something of that nature. So he's going to take risks, and he's going to do anything to kind of, you know, A, get the title back, and B, put on a match in which he just goes all out with it.
Sure.
Which is because he tends to react more than be the aggressor in matches. Mm. Even as the defending champion, he'll go on the attack, but he's not desperate. Which is why a lot of people can't get into him.
And this is the one where he's saying, you know, the brakes are off.
I'm going to go out. I'm going to take risks because you can't. Yeah, I'm just going to go all out. And show everybody that this is what professional wrestling is. It's everyone. It's leaving everything in the ring.
Sure.
So that's where we are. And Kobashi is wanting to defend his title, and he's trying to be the kind of he's wrestling more deliberately, and he's more focused, which is not what you expect from him that much, because he's more about the big moves and the bombs. So it's a little bit of a role reversal, I guess, from what their general roles are. So that's where we are. The theory is that it's a reaction to MMA that is coming around at the time. And they're going to leave everything in the ring and make sure that everybody knows they're leaving everything in the ring, even though it's traditional pro wrestling, and that's how they're countering it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, but this new stuff has arrived, but don't forget, we're the ones who will fight with our hearts. We are the ones who will give you everything, give you the best show.
Absolutely.
I get that. Slight deviation. Mark, how much more Kobashi and Misawa have we got coming up, particularly against each other?
Against each other, we've just got the one, and it's in that green ring.
It's
2003 NOAH match. Not against each other, shitloads. Honestly. This is our second of 9 Kobashi matches.
Oh.
In a row.
It's not Clerks.
In the next 40 episodes, it's not that high, but like one in every 5 or 6 matches we'll be covering now, we'll have Kenta Kobashi in it.
Wow.
And this is our second of 7 Misawa matches. And they are in the same matches in at least 3 of them.
Okay. Quite a lot. Get used to hearing those names. So, as I mentioned, we are at the Osaka Prefectural Gymnasium, now known as the Edion Arena, a capacity crowd of 5,500, which doesn't seem like enough, particularly given how loud these people are, my overriding note throughout is, my word, that crowd. They are hot. They are very much up for this. Osaka's a big wrestling town, and it's like, it's sort of like the looser, more rowdy city of Japan, isn't it? You know, if Tokyo went to university, Osaka decided it wanted to, you know, become a motorcycle mechanic instead.
It definitely adds to that reputation.
Yeah. I've heard Osaka described as the Japanese Liverpool, in the sense there's lots of comedians from there, and if you're not from there, you hate it.
It kind of has its own like dialect and stuff, like they don't quite speak Japanese the same way as they speak Tokyo Japanese and that kind of thing. Yeah, it's a real interesting seeming place, and I've only managed a day there, and most of that was spent looking for this very building that I would have found within 5 minutes if I'd only walked out of the right exit of the extremely confusing train station.
Well, my first day there, I went to an aquarium because I thought, it's a weekday.
Yeah, Kaiyukan rules. I love that place.
I'll go to an aquarium. It's going to be quiet because it's a weekday. I get there. There's a sign. Dear visitors, there are approximately 2,000 school children here. And it was also the day I saw a wrestling show in front of the lowest attended crowd I've ever been to. 13 people. For an Osaka Pro Wednesday lunchtime show.
That was the day you were taught how to cheer and clap, wasn't it?
Yep. They literally taught me how to cheer and clap and boo.
Fantastic.
I went to a show years back that had a paid attendance of 2.
Oh.
I wasn't working the show. I'd gone there to see a friend. The only paying people were like a mother and like her little boy.
You'd just refund them at that point, wouldn't you?
That's what I kind of said. Well, why don't you do that? I was like, no, they've come and they've paid their money. We got the ring year. Everyone's here. Nobody's getting paid.
Like the £8 they forked over is going to cover the cost of the fucking ring.
They're not having the £8. No, but they own their own stuff. So it's basically they all come from a jolly from like the southwest, from like, you know, deepest, darkest, I don't know, somewhere. And they're like, well, let's just have some practice matches and these two can watch kind of deal is, I think, the way
lucky
they did it.
Them.
Yeah, so that was like 2003 or something ridiculous, 2004.
I have a feeling this is going to be a very tangenty show. This is what happens when we don't see each other for a very long time. So, following on from last week's hair chat, Kobashi is going for 1990s Vince McMahon, whereas Misawa has a proto-mullet that looks like if you rotated it 180 degrees around his crown, it would look exactly the same. The back and the top are exactly the same length. It's from 1987 rather than 1997.
You get the feeling that these guys basically, and this goes for like all the old Japan guys, they get plucked from wherever they get plucked from. They get put in the dojo. They live in like tracksuit bottoms and like a white t-shirt. And then their wrestling gear, and that's all they own. You get that feeling. They have nothing but wrestling, so they don't know what a trendy haircut is.
I doubt they even know what a barber is.
Exactly. They're completely clueless of anything that doesn't involve putting on five-star wrestling matches. it's good for the, you know, for the art form of professional wrestling. It's maybe bad when they retire and they don't know how to turn a light on.
So, we start out, it's basically elbows versus chops until Kobashi gets drop kicked to the outside and walloped with the elbow suicida just 90 seconds in.
Yeah, this is Misawa taking it to him.
Very much so. Misawa then helps him back in with a back suplex and a senton. Kobashi grabs the ropes to prevent a Tiger Driver as Giant Bubba casually rocks up to the commentary booth, fashionably late 3 minutes into the match.
He's got to finish his cigar at the back.
Apparently so. The gaijin are asking for their wages.
He probably meant to be on time, but it took him that long to walk to...
Kobashi rolls under Misawa's flying lariat and chops him in the face. TNA kick, DDT. Misawa kicks out and rolls to the floor to collect himself. Back inside, he gets clubbed to his knees with a series of chops, including a particularly gross spinning chop to the back of the neck.
That spinning chop is lovely every single time because it's a thing he pulls out every so often. And you never know it's coming. And basically, when he hits it, it's disgusting every single time.
Yeah, it looks like Marie Antoinette ordered it.
It's like you don't, yeah. Masewa's equivalent, which I don't think he pulls out in this match. It might have come along a little later. He does like basically a Judas effect, a spinning back elbow.
Oh, we got a Judas effect in here.
Is that okay? I must have. Yeah, no, but there's what it's got the similar kind of, you don't expect it because you're expecting the rolling elbow and you're expecting the short elbows he does and the combination, the boxing, the left-right elbows he does. But the spinning back elbow, again, you never expect it. Hmm. It's like Tenryu's little step kick when he's older and grumpier. The little step kick that always makes an almighty crack sound and everybody just cringes at the same time.
Misawa gets some brief moments of hope, usually with a whip reversal or an elbow strike, but mostly it's Kobashi on top, and he's punishing Misawa's midsection with knees and punches, a falling front suplex that drops him more on his face than his stomach.
That's so many kitchen sinks.
Yeah.
It's like Wicks.
Yeah.
There's a bow and arrow, there's an abdominal stretch, and it's like, I guess man got no core, man got no tiger driver.
Yeah, that's the idea. There's a bit, and I don't know if it's here or a little bit later, where you expect Kobashi takes him into the corner and you expect him to go in for the chops.
Mm.
He doesn't. He punches him in the stomach a bunch of times.
Yes. I love those punch flurries. It's great.
It's kind of like he's almost in a way Tanahashi would, as we talked about last week, sort of like experimenting with being a bit of a heel and being a bit rougher than usual.
I don't know if it's that as much as it's, he's going to expect me to take him to the corner and chop him, so he's going to be kind of prepared for it. So yeah, I'm just going to punch him in the stomach a whole bunch.
Yeah, it's a fake out, I guess. So Misawa stops the corner whip by getting a foot on the middle turnbuckle, but turns around into a thrust kick to the throat.
Oh, it's great.
Which he shrugs off for a second and just decks the champ with a forearm. He does then sell it afterwards, like staggering around and, you know, clutching his mist gland.
No, I need to compose myself. The mist gland.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. It's just got me. Sorry.
He composes himself enough to use a spinning back elbow and a spinning kick to put the champion down again. And now it's Misawa's time to do some stretching while he recuperates. And it's the old head between the shoulder blades, double arm stretch from behind, which I'm sure has a more elegant name than that.
Surfboard, isn't it?
How many times have you surfed on your head?
Once.
Like the knee between he's sitting, knee between the shoulder blades, pull his arms back.
Yeah, but then they get up and he's still got hold of Kobashi's wrist and he's using his head between the shoulder blades.
Oh yeah, there is another Misawa Kobashi match where they basically go back and forth with that, reversing on each other for about 10 minutes. It's wonderful.
Well, Kobashi fights him over it here and eventually gets the reversal. But Misawa is there with the old, the Tiger Mask escape mule kick.
Yeah, the forward roll kick. I love it when Misawa, being significantly older, significantly more broken down, significantly more of a heavyweight, just busts out Tiger Mask stuff.
Oh, we're getting to that. Don't you worry.
Yeah, you are.
He bats the champ out of midair with an elbow as he charges back in with a flying shoulder block.
I love that. And then, great little stuff.
And then apparently he's been playing Super Street Fighter 2 in the dressing room as he hits a sort of downward trajectory version of Kami's spiral arrow kick off the middle rope. One of those very un-Misawa-like moves we talked about with WH Park, when he just suddenly remembers, oh yeah, I was in Mexico for a couple of years.
Yeah, with a corkscrew drop kick.
It's so weird.
Yeah, but he's got a corkscrew plancher as well.
A corkscrew that's been bent by Yuri Geller, perhaps. But yes, I know
it's what he's
mean.
Going for. Yeah. It's in Giant Grand 2000 for the Dreamcast. They animated it, so it must be part of his.
So I've seen him do that before. I've never seen him do this kick before. In fact, I don't think I've ever seen anybody like Rob Van Dam and Amazing Red don't do this kick. It's so bad, and it's a guy the size of Misawa doing it.
Yeah, it's like his had his spinning flying lariat ducked. Mm. It's the old, it's the Devon Dudley one with the the spinning flying one. And it's like Misawa shouldn't be doing spinning flying lariats. No, it doesn't seem right,
particularly because that type of spinning flying lariat, the spin part is only for effect. It only happens after the impact. So Kobashi is more of a virtua fighter guy, and he retreats to the floor. Back inside, he gets flung across the ring with a butterfly suplex and has his fillings rattled by those batting elbows to the jaw that you were talking about before.
Yeah.
Middle rope elbow drop and a turning frog splash off the top get Misawa a solid two. I am a mark for any top rope splash where people aren't lined up perfectly and there has to be an adjustment by the flyer.
I love, it's underrated, the way Misawa flies. Because he doesn't soar. He's not, like, fast. He kind of hangs in the air until a certain point in which he just drops and crushes you. You know what I mean? It's incredibly graceful, but it's also the kind of thing that no one else in the world can possibly do.
He's proto-Pac. He's the man that gravity forgot until it suddenly remembers.
Yeah, exactly. That's perfect. But yeah, that frog splash he does, he adjusts in midair and hits it perfectly. It's what he does.
It looks great. He decides that submissions and a rest are probably a better idea than all this jumping off the rope. So there's a camel clutch and then a seated twisting face lock that looks no fun to be in. And Kobashi drags both of these to the ropes to get out.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether that camel clutch was actually a face lock with him sitting on his back. It's the same face lock. I'm not sure if that's what he was going for there. Because he doesn't have it. It's not like an Iron Sheik kind of grip under the thing. It's something slightly different. And I couldn't quite work out. But I don't know if it's like a variation on the face lock and then the face lock that's actually won matches before.
All of which look very painful anyhow.
Oh, yes.
Kobashi catches the third of Misawa's little hop kicks to the chest and chops away at the sides of his neck like he's sharpening a knife.
Yes.
Go on.
No, I was just lost in admiration thinking about it, quite frankly. I wasn't going to make any kind of coherent point.
They trade barrages of strikes until Misawa is able to knock Kobashi to the floor. He looks to follow up with another elbow suicida, but instead does his trademark flip over the top rope feint. And when he tries for a diving forearm off the apron, Kobashi just moves and Misawa crashes hard, elbow first, into the railings.
He absolutely eats shit on that. It's wonderful. Yeah. And the camera work as well, it's focusing almost entirely on Kobashi. So you just see Misawa coming into frame and dying immediately.
Yes. So the champion now has a target. And speaking of camera work, now comes my favourite shot of the match. The camera at ringside follows Misawa as he eventually gets up and onto the apron. And as it pans around to show the rest of the ring, like a steam train in orange trunks, Kobashi comes rocketing across the ring from the back of the shot and just smashes him back into the railing with a killer lariat over the ropes. Fantastic. Loved it. Referee Kyohei Wada is very keen that Kobashi not go out after Misawa, so Kobashi immediately obediently rolls back into the ring and then instantly rolls back out again and goes and picks him up. Wada also insists that Kobashi move his ass out of contact with the bottom rope before he'll make a count. Very diligent.
Yeah, he won't count one of the seconds is all Misawa was under the ropes the entire time. Why did you count this as well?
So Misawa gets in like an instinct elbow, but it hurts him as much as it hurts Kobashi. He also fails to block a jumping knee with it in the corner, and Kobashi just goes to town on this injured joint.
I loved how throughout this, not only is Misawa selling really good, but it's also the idea that Misawa's strikes haven't got the juice they had because he's not able to put everything in.
It's something I've mentioned before on this show. A lot of people don't understand the concept of people doing things on instinct. Why does Misawa keep using his injured elbow? Because that's what he does. Like that's it. That's his primary thought. Oh, someone's running at me. This is what I use to hit them with.
It's look at his stance. When he's just standing, say at the beginning of a match, preparing to lock up, he's got his arm cocked back at all times, ready to throw an elbow every single time. Mm. It's the same with most of them. They've all got their like main strike ready to throw.
Yeah.
Because that's their main weapon. And of course that's what you're gonna go for.
Mm. There is a lovely moment outside. I say lovely moment. Kobashi is repeatedly smashing the elbow into the railing and a moment I quite like, which was sort of almost like a leg drop across the arm, across the railing. He just hoofs his leg up over Misawa's head and brings his whole leg crashing down on the arm. Just behind this, There's a woman in the front row in pink, shrinking away from the violence going on in front of her. But two rows behind her, there's a fella going bananas.
Yeah. This is why Tanahashi is wrong about everything.
So, someone pretty clearly says, fuck you, as they get back into the ring. I think it might have been Kobashi to Wada as he's trying to get the champ to play fair with the arm. Yes. And he doesn't, really. He's twice
he's not giving... doing anything wrong.
No, he's not doing anything illegal, but he won't lay off it.
No, he won't.
He's a dog with a bone with this thing. Like,
yes.
He twice gives Misawa an arm breaker over the turnbuckle tensioner, then over the top rope, then a variation on the divorce court, and then slaps on the jujigatame.
I've never expected Kobashi to hit a jujigatame. I don't know why. Yeah. It's just not a Kobashi thing.
This is what I mean, because this is the King's Road match that is least like a King's Road match whilst very much being a King's Road match.
I mean, we've talked about it before. Like, yeah. All Japan of the 90s wasn't the submission promotion. Like, it was strike hard, get the pin.
It was. Occasionally, guys would win by submission. The reason why everyone, like, collectively shit themselves when Misawa puts that face lock on is because he's beaten people with it.
Ah.
The stretch plum that Kawada has, same deal.
Yeah.
I don't think off he's the top of my head
Kawada's the guy I think of when I think of submissions in 90s All Japan, but I can think of loads of people in 90s New Japan who had submission finishers.
Yeah, that was obviously more influenced by UWF people leaving and coming back, and they were kind of more, that was more integrated into their thing. But you're right in the sense that it was all about the big bombs and the big moves and just fighting until you can't fight anymore.
Yeah.
But they threw some submissions in to make it interesting. Everyone's got multiple ways of putting someone out. It's more varied than I think the stereotype of it is.
Yeah. I mean, that's borne out just by playing VPW 2, where everybody's got half a dozen finishers.
yeah.
So Misawa gets a toe under the ropes to get out of this hold. Kobashi does the arm breaker upside down over his shoulder a few times, forcing the joint the wrong way and lays in some kicks. And when Misawa has some ideas about a comeback, out of nowhere, Kobashi dumps him on the top of his head with a half Nelson suplex. Like, there is no build-up to that at all.
No, it's... I don't know if the kayfabe reason for that is... Well, if I do, it's definitely something where he's got the arm above, and it's the arm that he's been working on, and I don't know if the idea is to give Misawa a choice between landing on his head or landing on his arm.
Oh. I didn't even think of that. Either way, it seemed a bit of a disproportionate response to a man just elbowing you in the face.
I don't know. If someone was to walk in right now and elbow you in the face, how much retribution would you give him?
Fair.
It's late 90s All Japan. Disproportionate response describes most of the second half.
Might as well have been the company tagline. So Kobashi locks in the Yuji Nagata-style armbar. All it's missing is the demon eyes. And again, the challenger gets the ropes. When Misawa tries to forearm his way back into it, Kobashi cashes the second one and drops them to the mat in a wakigatame this time. So nice to hear it called that rather than the Fujiwara armbar.
I was going to call it the Fujiwara armbar. Should I not do that?
You can if you like.
I like double arm suplex over butterfly as well.
I wrote butterfly earlier.
You did, I think you said it earlier.
Yeah, I did. Anyway, yet again, the bottom rope is Misawa's best friend.
Also, Misawa's best friend, the crowd, because my God, that Misawa chant at this point.
Yes.
And that's the thing. Throughout this match, aside from the first 5 minutes, this is a Misawa crowd.
Yeah.
There is a big Kobashi chant later on, but it's very clear everybody loves both men.
It's the typical
Japanese thing of cheering for whoever the underdog is at any given moment.
Yeah.
Up to this point, it had been 53 months since Misawa had won his first Triple Crown, and he was champion for 36 of those 53 months. So I suppose that's part of it. When you're the champion for so long, you either get over or you get shat on.
Yeah.
Fair. And again, if we were giving these episodes titles. So Kobashi only lets up on the arm abuse to German suplex Misawa on his head again. And when Misawa tries to rush back in, whips him over with a lovely judo throw back to the jujigatame. And that's another thing I love in pro wrestling is like legit judo moves for some reason.
Yeah. There's, what's his name? Lariat's killed a guy. Sasaki.
Oh, different one.
No, Kensuke Sasaki. He had a few judo throws dotted about, didn't he?
Ipponze, yeah.
Yeah, the Ipponze, and he had... Is that the mountain bomb, or is that a different move?
Different move.
Yeah. All right. Mm. Yeah. I just think of him when I think of like slightly awkward judo moves incorporated into pro wrestling.
Misawa gets dumped on his head again with another suplex when he tries a spinning kick.
Lovely. That's one of my favorite bits, because he's trying now, because he's a little bit clearer headed. He's trying to attack with his legs for the first time in a while. And the first time he tries it, he gets caught and just hucked backwards like he's like he's a jobber in a Steiner match.
Yeah, pretty much. He does manage to get a boot up on a lariat and then foil a second one by driving his battered elbow into it. And then Kobashi sells his pick, and they're both rolling around on the mat like Peter Griffin clutching their leg, each with a knackered right arm instead.
Yeah.
Whatever the Japanese for is ringing out across the arena.
And I like that this basically, Kobashi's arm is now starting to hurt, partly because of how many strikes he's throwing with this thing. And you kind of, there's a spot about 3 or 4 minutes earlier where you see Kobashi hits a strike and he's working his arm out a little bit. So it almost gets a little bit of foreshadowing. And it's this idea that Kobashi's focusing so much that he's kind of injured himself in the process. And I love the way that this match flows with the different body parts being worked on. And it's not like it's legit quarters where like something is introduced each time, but it builds and that the structure changes slightly. And I really like this, especially because they both play into it with the selling throughout.
Yeah. We're kind of talking about this if it's the Misawa show so far. We've been talking about it, you know, how incredible he's been this. Kobashi's selling after he gets his lariated is just incredible. Mm. He's screaming and writhing in pain. I think the Peter Griffin gag's a little bit mean.
It is, but I couldn't resist.
but it does go on for a bit. But he's done something to his arm, and that's kind of evened it up a little bit, especially as that's his big thing. The lariat is his new big move. He's only been using it for 6 months.
Oh, really?
Yes. And he's only been using it as a finish, like a advertised finish, so to speak, for less than that, because he was going to use it as a mid move. Mm. And Hansen called him into the Gaijin locker room and said, "You need to use this as a finish.
Look, this is mine. And if you don't beat people with this, I'm going to be annoyed."
Basically, yes. So it's his new move, which he can't do, basically.
Mm. Something I don't think we've done justice to is absolutely everything we've talked about so far, and absolutely everything we will talk about to the end of this match, is full force.
Mm.
No, like, nothing. We talked about this previously when it came to All Japan. The only thing that is quote unquote fake about All Japan Pro Wrestling in the 90s is the finish is predetermined. Like, if the next spot is you are getting chopped by Kobashi, you are getting chopped by Kobashi as hard as he can chop you.
Yes.
This is full contact fakery.
It is incredibly painful imaginary athletics.
Yes. Yeah. It's one of those ones like I seem to remember on lots of old Alvarez shows, like he'd be reviewing a match and there'd be a stiff strike and he'd be like, "Guys, don't you know this is fake?"
But it's not meant to be fake.
Yes,
Brian.
I know, exactly. It is a simulation of a combat sport.
Yeah, it's why people can pull out judo throws in this match that they don't usually use. It's because they are trained fighters and they've got a background in everything that's basic.
So, trained fighter Kobashi heads to the outside and gets caught with a baseball slide and the aforementioned corkscrew plunger, which is mostly just both of Misawa's legs clobbering Kobashi in the face.
I like to think of this as the spinning egg kick, because it's not quite a wheel kick.
part
of me, a bit like the one earlier, part of me wonders if the idea there is to avoid him landing on his bad elbow.
Fair.
But I don't know.
Or couldn't get enough pull on the rope because he's got a bad elbow.
No, because he jumps over and he twists after he clears the ropes. It's clearly a stylistic choice of some kind that doesn't 100% come off. But I don't know if the theory behind that is, well, I'm not going to do an elbow suicida, or if I do a plant try, I'm going to be landing on my bad elbow. Let's see if I can do this so I can kind of land in a different way and not hurt myself as much.
Well, speaking of landing in a different way and not using the bad elbow, he hits his flying spinning lariat with the left arm.
Yes.
But can't get the tiger driver. He can, however, foil a lariat and launch the champ with a German suplex.
Yes.
The crowd start chanting for Kobashi, and Misawa does hit the tiger driver, but he can't cover properly. And in a rare slip, Wada has a momentary lapse, counting even though one of Kobashi's shoulders isn't in the same postcode as the mat. It's on top of Misawa's leg for part of the pin.
It's basically level with the top rope, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he's counting, and there's the idea that maybe he's only looking at the one shoulder, but you don't deserve to have people shake your name.
Misawa goes for the diving missile kick off the top, but Kobashi clubs him to earth with a lariat, but struggles to cover because of the damage to his arm. Instead, he does the test falling powerbomb and jackknife covers Misawa, but he kicks out. Misawa tries to fight up off the mat, but the champ crushes him with two leg drops over the back of the head. The second one coming at the end of a sprint out of a corner.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's impactful. And it's better than Hulk Hogan ever did it.
Yeah. When he was, you know, younger and wearing red tights, his finish was top rope leg drop.
Yes.
The guillotine leg drop. And so he did that. I think he stopped doing it a few years after this, but it was always like a decent part of his arsenal. Until this point.
A decent part of his arsenal is him fucking hurling Misawa into the Orange Crush.
That's my favourite Orange Crush.
I didn't think he was going to sit down with it the first time I saw it. I thought he was just going to fling him and walk away. That's what it looked like. It only gets a two count, though. It is a two count, however, that has the crowd shaking the hard camera.
I was going to say that after that, they're drumming their feet and the hard cam is all over the place.
Yes.
And that doesn't always happen.
Oh, no.
And they drum their feet really loudly at multiple times throughout this match.
Yeah.
Even within like the first 10 minutes, I seem to remember one.
Misawa gets both arms up to block a running lariat. And while it works and leaves Kobashi clutching his arm, it also means he takes both of his own fists to the face and gets knocked down anyway.
I love that spot.
So did I. This isn't a complaint. Kobashi is still up first. In the craziest spot so far, and possibly the whole match, Kobashi hoists Misawa up for a powerbomb off the apron and gets reversed into a Frankensteiner that sends them both crashing to the floor. And bear in mind, this is not Rey Mysterio Jr. and Psychosis. These are meaty boys.
Yes.
I screamed both times I watched this.
Oh, yeah. It would be shocking now.
It's half a ton of humanity just splatting.
Yeah. Thanks, Gorilla.
I believe there's a previous match where he'd actually hit the powerbomb, so it's a counter to something he'd done before, I think. But that spot's very famous, and I'll see if I can send you the clip from there's a picture of like Weekly Pro that has a lovely shot of that and like a caption.
Oh wow!
And the caption is something along the lines of abandoning health.
Yes, correct.
What's that? The other 90s All Japan catchphrase.
Back on the inside, Misawa capitalizes with an elbow, a lariat, and a German suplex that he has to modify and sort of drop Kobashi to the side because the bad arm won't hold up.
Yes, I love that. I love that specifically.
But he does it safely as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was not the All Japan catchphrase of 1990s. No. Safely.
Two spinning elbows drop the champ each time. Kobashi, though, sees a third one coming and gets underneath it with a falling lariat that takes them both down. They struggle to their feet, and Misawa, which might at this point in my notes autocorrect, corrected this to Miss AWA, which is a sight. It's a mental image for you.
Have you been watching lots of AWA?
I am
like
not.
Women's?
None, in fact.
lots of Medusa Miceli and...
No. I'm just imagining him there in his green tights with a bunch of flowers and a crown and a sash.
And a sash.
Yeah.
What, like the Real World Tag League?
Yes, absolutely. So Miss AWA gets a few elbows in before being spiked by another German on the head. He does know he has a back, right? And doesn't need to take all of these on his head.
The amount, it's like, I'm pretty sure every suplex is either head or head adjacent.
I mean, I'm making light of it because of like how he died, but like, Jesus Christ, like you can see this, you can see the cumulative damage starting or continuing.
Yeah, I think the safest one is the first one he takes where he lands directly on his head, but he kind of rolls on the top of his head and lands on his front.
And as you mentioned, he does kind of have an arm up, even if it is the kayfabe bad arm. Like, yeah, he is protecting himself in some way. But like, there's two or three of the German suplexes where he just isn't, like, he's just relying on that floofy hairstyle to help him.
Maybe that's why he's got that hairstyle.
Maybe he's got a pad hidden inside it.
He would have died 5 years earlier if he hadn't had that hair. And we're all here making fun. You're a monster.
Yes. So what happens?
Wrestling.
Kobashi pulls Misawa up and tries a charge, but Misawa simply drops to his knees and lets Kobashi run stomach first into his head. And as he staggers away, returns the concussion with a spinning elbow to the back of the head, just crumbling him into the ropes. He pulls Kobashi out of the ropes into a release tiger suplex, but Kobashi kicks out. Kobashi's not done fighting, though, and he goes for a spinning back chop, but Misawa ducks it, taking the arm as it goes over his head, and at the third attempt, hits the most talked-about move of the month, the Tiger Driver 91.
Yes.
He plants Kobashi on the top of his head. Like, I mean, we complain about all the head drops that Misawa has been taking. Like, he's giving as good as he's getting. Like,
yeah.
They've chalked up the same number of concussions each in this match, I think. Osaka goes nuts, including, I noticed, a pair of otherwise serious-looking fellas in suits in the front row who suddenly become very animated. Kobashi barely kicks out as the 40 minutes is called. Twice, Misawa goes to pick Kobashi up, but he's kind of like, I wrote that Kobashi's like a landmine. Like, as soon as Misawa steps close enough to him, he kind of springs off the mat with like an exhausted kind of lariat.
He's trying, yeah, it's the get-up lariat from the AKI games.
Yes, it
is. It's that, but there's nothing behind it. He does at least, what, six? There's nothing behind it. It doesn't work. No. But he keeps trying.
No, it staggers Misawa back a step or two, but like, he ain't bumping for this.
Yeah.
Final time, though, Misawa again ducks, takes the arm, and goes back into his pass for a move with a number in its name. This time, Tiger Suplex 84, which is basically a release dragon suplex without clasping the hands behind the head. We get a nice shot of the big shiner Kobashi is developing under his right eye as they sell on the mat. And then as they rise in their respective corners, Misawa is up just a hair quicker and rushes across the ring to clatter Kobashi with a running forearm and score the pin, 42 minutes and 6 seconds.
It's a great 42 minutes and 6 seconds.
Well, hey, as you've gone with that, you get to go first and tell us why you love this match.
Oh, because, Doug, I think I've gone over it. So, you know, we talked about it as we're going on. There's not much more I can add, except
sure.
I love the finish where it's not the biggest move that does it. It's, he's just about to go, right, okay, I'm just going to whack him with an elbow and see what happens. This is my big move. He's completely open for it. If this doesn't win, I'm done here because, you know, it's my last ditch and it was enough to get the win. I can't say enough. You know, there are other matches that he wins in that way where he does all the big things and then it's just the running lariat, the running elbow, I should say, that does it.
Yes, in fact, the 1998 match we talked about between them previously on
that's
the show.
That's right.
That ends in the same way.
Yeah, I think that's 43 minutes and a couple of seconds, isn't it, as well?
That wouldn't surprise me.
But they're very different matches, though. They're incredibly different matches. This very one different. Is so... Yeah. Again, the whole... There's a lot of... Like, we talked about arm work, but it's not just arm work. It's interesting arm work. It's different from the stuff you see in every match. Mm. Like you said, you've got there's divorce court. It's almost a single arm DDT.
And
all the submissions, the arm throw, all the stuff on the outside and the it's just, it's so different to the standard All Japan formula.
Mm.
And it's just something that you go in and you expect a certain thing from a Four Pillars match, and it's changed up. And I think that's why this one sticks out to me more than a lot of the others.
Mark, how are you feeling?
Well, I think of the All Japan matches that we've seen on this project that I hadn't seen before, mm-hmm. so far this is my favourite.
Okay.
On one hand, it's a 42-minute match, but one of the reasons I kind of prefer this to the 98 match is the way the structure and the flow changes with, it starts off with Misawa trying to win very quickly. Then Kobashi gains control with the bodywork. Misawa comes back. Misawa makes a mistake. Kobashi dominates with the arm work. Then Kobashi makes a mistake with the lariat getting blocked and hurts his arm. And then Misawa uses that to come back. It's that change of flow really helped get me into this because like the first 5-10 minutes, I wasn't massively into the match. Now, bear in mind, pretty much the last match I'd seen before this was Minoru Suzuki versus Tanahashi from 2012. And I love that match. So it's a bit of a harsh place to go from that to one you hadn't seen before. But it's like, don't get me wrong. I'm not calling this a must-see match for me, but it's a match where I kind of get more what people like about the style. I completely understand why it was so popular with like the early 2000s tape traders, because it's ahead of the US stuff. It's when I was sort of like first couple of years into watching wrestling, after I'd had my original Mark period when I thought the Chronic was good, that kind of stuff. I kind of, in my head, the idea was that the best matches and are the ones that are just full of moves constantly. And as I've got older, I've kind of got away from this. This is that kind of, it's full of moves, but also I'm appreciating there is a story, there is a change in flow. There is this bit. The only thing is, I think the story is a little less easy for me to grasp than, for example, that Suzuki versus Tanahashi match, which is very clearly it's limb work, then limb work, struggle finish. And I don't know why. Maybe it's the video footage and being less crisp in this one, but there's just something where I struggle initially to get into it. As I said, I wouldn't call it must-see, but I get it with this, and I really enjoyed it towards the end. On one hand, I would have appreciated if it was a few minutes quicker, but I did really like this.
I think this is the All Japan match I've enjoyed the most so far for this show.
Yeah.
As I said at the beginning, it was mildly tempered by knowing the result of a match I'd never seen, because I knew Kobashi doesn't get his first singles win over Misawa until Champion Carnival 2 months later. Mark, you might appreciate this bizarre analogy. In between my two viewings, so as I've mentioned before, I do a fan viewing where I just watch it and let it flow, and then later on I will do a notes viewing where I pause it and, you know, write down and like, you know, construct the play-by-play. In between those two viewings, I finished off the Hajime no Ippo anime.
Oh, yeah.
And for me,
you need to watch that.
Do it.
Yeah.
For me, this was just like the final fight in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's two equals who refuse to lose, destroying each other with cannon shots over the course of a long match and wearing each other down until the challenger gets one final shot into that the champion can't stand up to and beats him.
Yeah.
It was really weird. Like, I watched the match and then I watched the last few episodes of the show and I was like, huh, that felt a lot like that Kobashi Misawa match. And then I rewatched the match and I'm like, huh, that really was a lot like that boxing match in that cartoon. Quite fitting for a show that quite literally contains a character straight up named Kenta Kobashi.
Don't they have a Yoshiaki Fujiwara who headbutts people too?
Mark might be able to tell you in the manga. But,
They've got a guy that does throw headbutts, but his name isn't Fujiwara.
There are, however, loads and loads of wrestling references, and almost all of the fights take place either... Well, the ones in Osaka are in Osaka Prefectural Gymnasium, this venue, and all of the Tokyo ones are in Korakuen Hall.
Yes, I've played the a bit of the Victorious Boxers PS2 game, which I assume is the a playable version of the anime.
Oh, I don't know, but I'm going to have to find the ROM and put it on the Steam Deck. Anyhow.
Yeah, do it.
it's so funny. God, we've gone off track again. I at various points throughout the show, I was like, I'd really like to play a video game version of this. Anyhow, yes, highly recommended on Netflix. 76 episodes of Hajime no Ippo, The Fighting. Loads and loads of wrestling references, including the coach from Shin Nihon Gym having a suspiciously large chin.
Awesome.
Yeah.
This is, yeah. I've read the first 100 or so Kinnikuman.
Right.
Manga, and that's obviously chock full of stuff.
Of course.
The irony is the Sendo versus Ippo match that Kieran's referring to, in the manga, that was written in 1994.
Huh.
So it was actually 3 years before this.
Yeah, but the anime is like 2000.
The anime is 2000.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, we're talking about an anime based on a manga that started in 1987 and is still fucking going and has still not delivered the match that it promised in the first year.
Is Ippo still 18?
Put it this way, he's still not fought Miata.
Oh my God. Right.
1300 chapters in. Anyway, end of that tangent.
To drag this back on track somehow. I will read you my final note. This is not me turning a corner on All Japan, as I'm still not wholly in tune with the style. A Misawa is still an expressionless sack of potatoes with a powerful right arm. But I thought this was a hell of a match, and it held my attention better over 42 minutes than any of the shorter All Japan matches we've covered to date. I thought this was really good. So, usual roundup, 4.75 stars in The Observer. Misawa won Wrestler of the Year and Most Outstanding Wrestler of the Year. This match was second in Match of the Year, losing only to Bret Hart versus Steve Austin from WrestleMania of 1997, which, it is no secret, is number one on the must-see matches list, with over 30% of respondents nominating it.
Yeah, as much as I like this match here, I'd watch Bret and Austin twice before this.
I tend to agree. But the interesting thing is, in The Observer, this match got more first place votes than Hart versus Austin.
Ah.
However, it lost out through total number of
votes.
On
volume, yeah.
Because of how Dave's voting system is weighted.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it didn't lose out by much. It lost out by, let me quick maths. So it got 8 more first place votes than Bret versus Austin, but lost out by 57 total votes.
That's close.
And that's a real thin margin.
I mean, you'd be struggling if you tried to watch them back to back because they're so different and they're both so good in very different ways.
Mm.
The funny thing with this one is, I'm pretty sure this is the only All Japan match that we cover on the project that didn't get 5 from Dave.
Interesting.
I'm pretty sure all the others that were that got enough nominations to cover on the podcast, pretty sure all of the others had 5. And this is the only one that was 4.75.
Well, that is something for you to keep track of for the next 8 months. Before we wrap this up and take it home, Moj, do you have anything more to add?
Yes. Misawa, despite the fact that he won his Triple Crown back.
Oh, yeah. Totally forgot that he won the belts back in this.
Yeah.
Like, the title was almost an afterthought to me.
It is, because it's all about the war. But he takes the belt. He's completely broken. One of his seconds is Satoru Asako, and he's leaning on him, and he's, you know, makes it to the back almost as if he's the one who's lost.
Mm.
And he gets to the back, he goes past the curtain, and then he collapses with the effort of it all. It's not on tape or anything, but that's just a little tidbit as to what actually happened, which shows that he did, in fact, leave it all in the ring.
Indeed. It's not surprising at all.
No.
Modge, thank you so much for coming and talking about this match with us.
That's been a
blast. Now is the time to tell everybody where to find you on the internet if you want to be found, if you've got any projects going on and that kind of thing. The floor is yours.
I have no projects at the moment. I did a project a few years back that people seemed to like, and I've therefore refused to do any since. I
Remember that. He doesn't do things that people like.
No, I do things that people like. I don't do things that people want me to do.
Ah, fair.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at @3kidneysmodge because I have famously three kidneys due to a transplant. And that's pretty much the only place I'm active. I don't tend to forum anymore. I don't have any projects. I don't have anywhere where you can throw money at me. That's it. I'll be talking about left-wing politics and pro wrestling and just occasional random stuff that comes into my mind. So follow me if you want.
Tremendous. As for us, we are at Musty Matches on Twitter, Instagram, Mastodon, possibly Threads if I get round to it. I don't know what's going to happen with the sinking of the Twitter boat. What else? I am
at Twitter
Kieran.
Boat is meant to be sinking for a while, isn't it? And it's still going.
There are many very small leaks, yes. And the captain's a fucking buffoon.
You're going to die in the cage fight and then there'll be no one to run Twitter and then it will die.
Oh, yeah, that's a good plan. Pretend I didn't say that. Oh. I am at Kieran Edits and Mark is...
at @monkey_buckles.
You can go to linktr.ee/mustseematches for all the ways to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations and loads more. Every month, as Modge brought up earlier, I am on GCP with Andy Ogden reviewing the horrific 1999 British wrestling television show UWA Wrestling Rampage.
I have seen some of this and it was rotten.
It's not good, is it? Both thumbs in your armpits.
I watched all that stuff at the time and it was better. In context, week to week, not much better, though.
No. Our penultimate episode of that came out about 2 weeks ago. We have one more to go, which we're recording in 2 weeks from now. That you can go to @GCPPodcast1 on Twitter and go to GCP Podcast. It's not about Google Cloud products. It's about wrestling on your Twitter. No, your podcast app of choice. I'm tired and I cannot be bothered re-recording anything. What else? Next week, Ring of Honor, Manhattan Mayhem 2, Takeshi Morishima versus Brian Danielson. And our guest will be the mighty Sarah Flan. So make sure you're here for that. Thank you very much for listening and goodbye.